This is We Are Netflix, Netflix employees talking about work and life at Netflix.
It's walking out of the room and thinking, did this person bring something that I don't have? Do they have something that the rest of my team does not? Did they challenge my thinking in a way that I haven't been challenged before?
You might think the best thing to do in a job interview is to say all the things the employer wants to hear. But Nelly Peshkov, Vice President of Talent Acquisition at Netflix, says that's not the way we do things here. She says that when she and a recruiting team talk to prospective Netflix employees, they're not looking for conformity and agreement. They really want people who bring something new and different to the company. People who will challenge our assumptions and push us out of our comfort zones. That's a big thing here. We think difference makes us stronger. People with different views, different backgrounds, different experiences, working toward a common goal while still being themselves. Yeah, it sounds kind of utopian. Great in theory. But how does a company put it into practice? Well, it's not simple. It involves lots of effort, lots of learning from each other, and lots of open conversations about sometimes difficult and sensitive subjects. I'm Lyle Troxell, and today on We Are Netflix, we have one of those conversations. I spoke with two members of our recruiting team about building a culture of difference, diversity, and inclusion. Nelly Peshkov runs our talent acquisition organization, helping hiring managers around the company to find great employees. And Kim Taylor is a recruiter for Nelly's team. She recruits the recruiters. We started off with Nelly describing some of the special qualities that she and her team look for in job candidates.
Business acumen and passion, understanding for the business, curiosity about the business is probably most important. That is a differentiator, I think, that we look for in our candidates. And in addition to that, we have a couple of attributes that we talk about that we consider as stunning colleagues. And, you know, certainly curiosity is one of them. A lot of the Netflix values, of course. But there's something else that we look for that I highly value, and that's grit.
Grit.
Mm-hmm. Because what we do, we don't have a rule book for. We are a growing business. We are scaling so rapidly around the globe. You never know what you're going to recruit for. You never know what role we will need to open, right, create anywhere in the business. So as a recruiter on our team, you have to be super curious, really excited, passionate, but just greedy and getting into it and figuring it out.
Okay. Does that grit make sense to you, Kim?
Absolutely. It's probably one of the biggest, you know, contributors to my success in general. I think that Netflix is a good place for me because I'm naturally gritty. Like, I just naturally have the passion and the desire and the drive to just keep going and to not necessarily take no for an answer. And I think it's something that we look for in all of our talent acquisition members to sort of be able to understand when you push back. In previous roles, that was a no-no, you know, questioning leadership or having tons of opinions on, you know, how we're running our operation or the business or how we're recruiting. And what I found, and I share this with a lot of the candidates that I speak to, I was so excited to understand that joining Netflix, this would be encouraged. Like, I would be encouraged to have a voice. I would be encouraged to push back. I would be encouraged to question. But on the other side of the table, being here for a year now, it's not just that you're encouraged. It's that you're expected and required to do it. So it's a little different when you're here in the chair. But I think people who are successful here don't have a problem, or at least can get more comfortable with, you know, pushing and being gritty and being bold when necessary.
The questioning process that
questioning
we're doing,
or yeah, being the only one in the room that disagrees with a room full of people who all think the same way.
That's, like, hard to do.
It's very hard to do. So it was an adjustment for me personally, because I think I always had it in me, and it was what I was, you know, kind of longing for in other positions. But then when you get here and you actually have to do it, it's like, oh, this is a little bit scary. So, you know, having the support of the team and understanding that leadership really does value, you know, your point of view and your perspective encourages you to be more gritty and more bold.
Okay, it sounds like, you know, you're like self-defined as having grit. And you want people that have that. But what does that mean in reality? How do you find people with this attribute that's a little elusive?
Yeah, I think that as I'm talking to people, whether it's on the phone or over video conference or in person, I'm asking them to tell me about their journey, what it has looked like in the environments in which they work, things that they agree with, things that they disagree with. And a lot of times I can pick up on when people are content to just go with the status quo versus when they have some story about a time when they disagreed with their manager or leadership and when they pushed back and, you know, what that felt like and if it was uncomfortable. All the stories don't have to end with a win.
Yeah.
But if I can at least pinpoint, there it is, that's where they had the courage and the boldness and the grit to sort of push against the grain.
So you're looking for someone who exemplifies that they've made change like that, even if it was a structured environment that was very difficult to do so, but that they pushed against it a bit. Not just someone that can say there was problems there and seemed passive in that problem state.
Right. Because most people will call out problems. And then my question is, okay, so what did you do?
Yeah. And you don't want to hear, I left.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even have to be work-related, because not everyone, again, works in environments where they're empowered to challenge or to create change. And I know I'm a sucker for when I talk to people on the phone or meet in person for our team, and they tell me even some personal story of where they persevered and experienced a challenge. And like Kim said, maybe it did not result in an impact they were hoping it would, or created, right, some change that they were hoping for. But nevertheless, they persevered, they worked through something, they just did not give up.
Kim, do you have special methods to get that from somebody? Not that I necessarily want to have you to share all your secrets, but is there a certain way you tell people, or most people you're chatting with have already read our memo on what our culture is like, or culture memo, and so they're coming from a place that's different, do you think? Or are you doing something unique?
I don't think there are, like, secrets or, you know, special methods. I'm just a naturally personable person. So I like to tell people, get comfortable. We're just going to have a conversation. This isn't going to be a structured, I ask you a question and you give me an answer interview, because I want to talk to you just like I would talk to you if we were sitting down to have coffee or dinner and you were a friend, because I want to hear your real stories. Some interviews, at least ones that I've attended, have been super structured and super rigid, and people feel like you're looking for the interview answers. Mm-hmm. And I'm just looking for the real answers. So like Nelly said, sometimes it's personal experiences that people are sharing with me. I've heard tons of wonderful stories and interviews that have nothing to do with work or career or professional development, just personal perseverance. Mm-hmm. And so being able to pull those stories out of people and even share my own personal experiences, I think helps to shape the interview. And then we get to the real things that we want to hear people sharing with us.
Okay. So it's not really about the structure of the questions themselves. It's more about the structure you put in place in the conversation, setting the tone of the conversation.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the questions do matter, but they have to be real questions. Like, I'm genuinely interested in people and like their stories and their backgrounds. And so I've learned over time, like, where to probe, where to push. You know, someone gives me an answer and there's something there that I want to scratch on a little bit, I'll, you know, dig a little deeper. But really just to get people to open up, especially here at Netflix, it's so important in our environment to be able to have honest, candid conversations. And if they can't do that in the interview, then it might be really hard for them to do that here. And sometimes it's even me telling people, like, listen, I just want you to get really comfortable with me because I want to know who you are. And so for me, I think it's just getting to connect with people and making them feel comfortable being their genuine selves.
And surely, you know, we sit back and we listen, right, when we talk to candidates, and we pay attention to the various signals that can indicate to us whether or not this person will be successful at Netflix, and whether it's, can they get vulnerable? Are they curious in the interview? Again, do they share all our values? You know, how do they think about inclusion? Are they a naturally inclusive person who really respects and admires the differences that we have as people? So in all of the answers that candidates share, in all of the stories that they share, we just sit back and listen and make a judgment call. Will they be effective and will they be successful in our environment and in this role?
Let's talk a little bit about your backgrounds and coming here. Nelly, you started before Kim, so let's start with you. What brought you here, and how do you say yes to the person that was recruiting you?
It was serendipitous, as I always say. So 4.5 years ago, I live right here in Los Gatos, and my family, most of my family lives here. In fact, my parents had a house right across from Netflix here in Los Gatos on Winchester, and I would drive by Netflix for years. And I was driving back from my parents' home and just thought, how come I'm not working at Netflix? It's such an incredible company. I've been a subscriber since DVD days, and I'm passing by, you know, this building and these headquarters, and it, so often, and it never even occurred to me that it could be a great place for me to work at. And then literally a week later, I get up in the morning and I get an email from Netflix that says, hey, can you consider us? Can you consider coming in and leading the global talent acquisition team? I immediately said yes because of that thought that I had a week earlier. And I was just curious. I've read about our culture. And as an HR professional, our culture memo is well known in the HR industry. And I studied it years ago when that first PowerPoint presentation came out. And I was really curious about, is it true? And how do you, the talent folks internally at Netflix apply it and how it impacts their roles and what they do and what they bring to the company. And then I engaged in conversations. And what ultimately sold me on the role, I would say a couple of things. One, 4.5 years ago, we were just on the verge of going global and launching Netflix around the world. And I wanted to be part of that journey. It just felt incredibly exciting as a consumer of Netflix service, Netflix content, to help this company bring those stories to so many people around the world. It was just the proposition that I couldn't say no to. And the other reason I was really excited was our culture. Again, to do what I do for a living, to do HR work in an environment that has no rules, no policies, where we empower people to do incredible work and give them the freedom and expect them to take that freedom with a huge sense of accountability and responsibility to do what's best for the company, was just exhilarating to have that experience. And of course, the talent acquisition team was tiny back then, and I was in a pretty large role with a pretty large global team prior to Netflix, and coming back to building up against something was super exciting.
Part of your buildup, I'm assuming, was in hiring Kim. Is that true?
Absolutely. And we've grown, you know, tremendously as a talent acquisition team around the globe. When I started 4.5 years ago, we were all here in Los Gatos. We were pretty homogeneous in our backgrounds and in our life experiences. And now we are in a quadruple that size around the globe. And we didn't even have a recruiter for talent acquisition. And now we have Kim, our own partner, who pushes us to hire even better for our own team.
Okay, well, I kind of hinted the fact that you were hired, of course, Kim. But can you tell me about what you were doing before being hired here and why you came?
So I've been working in talent acquisition or HR for the past, I guess, 11 or 12 years now. So I had been maybe 10 and a half years in. I was in Washington, D.C., working for a law firm. Mm-hmm. And I just randomly received a LinkedIn note from what would become my manager, asking if I was interested in having conversations about opportunities at Netflix. So it completely came out of the blue. Obviously, I knew Netflix. I've been a Netflix subscriber for a very long time, from the days of getting DVDs in the mail. But it just had never crossed my mind to work for a company like Netflix. Lived on the other side of the country in a completely different industry. And so I was intrigued and said, sure, like, let's have a conversation. But it was just a very big ask for me. I'm a wife and a parent, and had family and friends surrounding us where we lived on the East Coast. But once I read the culture memo, which is what the recruiter sent to me at the time, it just knocked me off of my feet. I mean, I was so excited. I just kept reading it over and over and trying to like share it with my husband. And he's like, what are you talking about? I don't want to read this stuff, because he just doesn't do this type of work. But I just couldn't believe that there was an environment, a work environment where these values were highlighted and talked about so openly. And the more and more I talked to people who work here at Netflix, the more I understood that it was real. But when I came here, I was just so pleasantly surprised by how warm everyone was and how open and honest the conversations were. I remember I sat down for lunch with a few of the team members to just sort of have a meet and greet. And maybe halfway through our lunch, I sort of stopped and I said, okay, just tell me, like, for real. Like, what's the real deal? Like, just tell me anything that you think I should know. And they all kind of looked at each other and laughed. And, you know, now we talk about that with those same people that I sat down with. And they were like, we just loved you because you were like, can you just tell me what's actually going on? Yeah, it's too good to be true. So, yeah, I think that I was in a much different place, a much different space. And I use that now when I'm recruiting for my partners to help them to understand that on paper, people may look very different, come from different backgrounds and not have any sort of relation to what we are doing here at Netflix on the surface. But as an example, I've been here for a year. I love it. Hopefully I'm succeeding. I'm looking at Nelly now.
Nelly's giving the thumbs up.
But it's just an example of how, you know, someone from a different background, from a different space, who may look different, sound different, you know, than everyone else here, can find a place here at Netflix.
Was moving your family hard?
Yes, it was hard because I think that we left a really big support system. However, I would not have taken the risk if I didn't think that Netflix would support me. And so, again, as a mom and as a wife, I feel super supported. I actually, which is crazy when I look back at it now, I was bi-coastal for 6 months because we wanted to wait for my son to finish school. The school year. And so my team worked with me. I was here 1 week, home another, and did that every other week for almost 6 months. And it was hard, but I was given the flexibility to do that. We didn't skip a beat, and it worked out really well.
Okay, so what in the culture memo and those conversations you had led you to believe that, yep, I'm going to split my existence on coasts and move my entire family because this is going to work? What actually was drawing you?
So I think the values around being open and transparent and candid, I liked the feedback culture piece that I read in the memo. I always want to be better. I'm just a naturally driven and competitive person, and not necessarily needing to be competitive with my peers or against my peers, but wanting to do better than I did the day before. And I feel like in my personal life and in my professional life, I can do that with more success if the people around me are telling me or pointing out the areas of development that I can't personally see.
Yeah.
And then when I'm given the opportunity to do the same. So I just hadn't worked in a place where I could openly, you know, share my opinions with my peers, not, you know, just my manager, you know, about the work that I'm doing. And them tell me, okay, I think this is a great idea, or I think this is a terrible idea, or I think this is where you could do better. So I was intrigued by working in an environment where I felt like if it was true, then I could grow. And I could grow more than, you know, I've grown in any other place. And to this day, I think in the last year that I've been here, I've probably grown more than I did in my entire work history prior to Netflix, just because I've been given the opportunity to have conversations with so many people and share so much and learn so much.
Nelly, what about for you? What part of the culture deck is the most important for you? Or the culture here, I should say.
It's the empowerment that I feel and that we cherish here. We hire, again, really smart, you know, accomplished, interesting people. And the best thing we can do is just get out of the way and let people do what they do best. And I cherish that. Along with all those things, of course, is candor and feedback and just listening to Kim. makes me feel so warm on the inside, because my worst fear is probably that I, even as a manager, as a colleague, do not know what experience people are having. And if Kim wouldn't have the courage to share what she's experiencing at work, what is or isn't making her successful, what obstacles she's encountering, if she is not sharing that with me or with your colleagues, that would make us all less effective. So that's probably my biggest fear. And it was, you know, an accurate fear in other environments. But here, you know, hopefully we provide the environment where people feel comfortable and trust that if they share, if they provide feedback or if they share something that isn't working, that we're all going to take it seriously, because we all want to win. We all want to be successful. And that means helping each other be successful.
I noticed in one of your talks that I was researching a bit that you mentioned this idea that one of the roles of the recruiter or the recruiting partner is to tell the manager, this candidate's good, they're a B+, but we want people that are great. We want that A+, and to kind of coach the manager not to settle. Is that a common thing that you see people that are on that boundary? And how do you detect that boundary? How do you know if someone's an A+ or not?
That's what we push for. And they often say, right, our recruiters are like psychologists, because again, they sit back and they listen and they really try to envision that individual on that particular group, in that particular role, and will they raise the bar for all of us? And the best way I can describe how you know is when I get off the phone with a candidate or I walk out of an interview with someone, let's say if it's in person, do I want more of that? Do I want another conversation with them? Did they make me pause and think differently? And when I walk away thinking like, oh, I'd love to get back into that room and talk for another hour, that's how I know that this is someone that probably would be amazing for our team.
Specifically for your team?
For any team.
When I hear you talk about this, it sounds at some level, whether you like the candidate or not, and I'm worried about our implicit bias, that we all kind of lean a certain way and like certain types of people because of our experiences in our life. And one of the problems we have in diversity has to do with that kind of initial state and checking yourself on that. So how do we, this is the broader topic we're coming in, how do we fight that first line of our implicit bias in the interviewing process?
We talk about it all the time in the talent acquisition team. You're absolutely right. And it's, you know, being cognizant, conscientious of your own biases, why you connect with certain people and you may not connect with others, recognizing it in the moment when you're talking to the candidate and challenging yourself beyond it. It's not about feeling the chemistry to me. Again, it's walking out of the room and thinking, did this person bring something that I don't have? Do they have something that the rest of my team does not? Do they have a perspective? Did they challenge my thinking in a way that I haven't been challenged before? And we're not looking for perfection. We're just looking for something that can make us better as a team.
Can one of you describe inclusion versus diversity, the difference of those things? Just describe those two things.
Yeah, I think that here at Netflix, I've had more conversations about this than anywhere else. And even for myself as a Black woman, there's been a lot of light shined on things that I just never thought about. So diversity, you're thinking about, you know, having lots of different people, you know, in the same space with different backgrounds and different, you know, thought processes and experiences. Inclusion is creating a space where all of those people feel welcome and a part of the space and a valuable part where everyone has a seat at the table.
Wouldn't you say they kind of feed off each other? Like the more inclusion you have, the more diverse people you get because it's inclusive?
Yes, and vice versa. Yeah. So I think that, yes, creating an inclusive space will not only help to attract, but retain diverse people. Bringing diversity into the workspace without inclusion, you won't have diversity for very long, because if people are uncomfortable, they will leave. Earlier, you had asked Nelly a question about how we think about interviewing people and making sure that our biases don't creep in. And some of these things are just things that we don't even think about, obviously, you know, the unconscious bias, that I think it's important for us to have representation in all places, in all spaces here within the organization to help combat that. So there are ways that I think about you just from looking at you that just don't even cross my mind. It's just a subconscious thing, but Nelly might have a very different perspective just because of her life experiences. And so when we create interview panels and hopefully are diversifying the interview panels, then we are able to then have a diverse perspective of evaluation when we're looking at, you know, the candidates that we're bringing in.
Yeah.
So I think it's important that we understand, again, inclusion, we understand diversity, we understand how important it is for us to bring representation in from many, many, many different groups so that we, again, have diverse interview panels or have diverse leadership teams, have diverse administrative support, because all of these people coming from all of these different angles help to create an inclusive environment.
Yeah. You mentioned that being a Black woman at Netflix, some things came to light.
Yeah, so we talk about being gritty and being bold and embracing candor, but as a Black woman, I've just sort of been raised in life to not come across as too aggressive, because I don't want to further perpetuate a stereotype that, you know, Black women are going to, you know, get angry or loud or be super confrontational. But those are ideas that were fed to me from the outside that then as an adult, I have to sort of unravel and understand what those things mean. So coming into a place where it's encouraged and accepted and required for me to have an opinion, I've had to overcome some of my personal insecurities and obstacles to say, you know, I can have a voice, I can have an opinion, and people aren't going to look at me a certain way because I'm speaking out.
Or if they do look at you that way, then you can talk to them about that and
yeah.
They can help hopefully grow away from that.
Right, right.
So you're saying that in this space, you were able to kind of restructure the way you speak,
yeah,
the way you were trained to speak. That seems a very hard thing to do in general.
And that's why I tell people all the time, you know, people that I work with, I am sort of one of the team psychologists, I guess. But, you know, people come to me because I have visibility into all of the hiring we do in the team and the spaces. People come to me with questions or concerns. And I do find oftentimes, just like me, there are people who are hesitant to speak out for many different reasons. I have my own reason, but there are people with a wide range of reasons that make it hard for them to embrace the fact that it's okay for them to have a voice here. And so I spend a lot of time trying to get people to understand that it is actually okay. You're not going to be fired for talking about how you feel or what you disagree with or how you think we should move forward or where we think we should do things differently. And I think that's the hard work that we're doing, making sure that everyone understands that what we say in the culture memo is actually real, that you can embrace candor, that you can be transparent, that you can share respectfully, obviously, but openly in this environment.
Yeah.
And it is hard, right? It's really hard. But I think what's harder is this concept of covering, mm-hmm. right? When you have to show up at work and you have to be a certain way because mm-hmm. that's the way you think you should be, mm-hmm. right, in the workplace. And you have to hide, right, parts of your identity, or you have to work so hard to change, right, your style or how you engage with others, how you work. And that takes a lot of effort. And it's an effort, right, and energy that's taken away from focusing on just doing great work.
Like the first time I ever talked to Nelly is very different from like how I talk to her now. And it was in you know, those first conversations, I can't even really think about what I'm trying to say because I want to make sure that I don't come off a certain way. Versus now where I've built this muscle because I've done it a lot on my own. And then in conjunction with that, Nelly has also created this space where I know that, you know, it's safe for me to talk openly. And so I can now just, you know, ping her or ask her for a moment of her time and sit down and share my thoughts with her. And she openly shares hers. And it's much easier because I've done it a couple of times and she's created that space.
Yeah. So I want to talk about something that I watch myself on too. I was told a few years ago by one of my managers that in meetings I had a tendency to speak over people and to just watch that. And so the question was just like, next big meeting, just don't say anything and just see where you want to talk and kind of take notes. So I studied myself in meetings. I might not have been as effective in those meetings to get my point across, but it was really effective for the group. Because what I found is that I was more likely to interrupt a woman than a man. And my self-awareness in meetings changed drastically. You know, I just was like, oh, this happens for me. Okay, let's just not let's not interrupt anybody, of course, but specifically find out who you are competing with in the room and let the person speak. So I shifted a bit for that. And I feel like it's never become unconscious. Like, I'm always working on that. Do you find you're always working on speaking up in a meeting?
Yeah. I think in the beginning, I have lots of opinions, and I love to talk. So I hold back. And I did that quite a bit before I worked at Netflix. But one of the first pieces of feedback that I received was that, my manager felt that I was holding back and that I could say more and that it was okay. And she told me to stop asking permission and just go ahead and do it. So I think after hearing that and digesting it and putting it to practice, it's become a little bit easier. But it's definitely something that I think about all the time. The good thing is that, you know, when I ask for feedback now, I hear across the board from people this same line, I think you found your voice. I think you found your voice. And not that I was ever some, you know, very timid, quiet person. I've always been a talker. But I can tell now that the conversations have changed and I'm a little bit more bold with the things that I'll approach and what I'll bring up and what I'll openly disagree with or raise my hand on. And again, it's something that I have to think about every day.
I think inclusion value, which is one of our values at Netflix, is the most challenging, I think, value for people to really understand and to guide their behavior by compared to any other value. Because this is one area where who we are as individuals, how we grow up, what our cultural upbringing is, what our individual family upbringing is, plays such role and has such impact. And for most of us, I think we've grown up valuing sameness and making sure that we treat everyone the same and that we don't actually recognize differences, right? That we suppress them and we look for that sameness and something that we can identify with people, you know, no matter where we come from. And I think we're all learning now that, you know, it's okay to show up differently. It's okay to talk about things that are really hard. Like, until recently, I couldn't easily talk about race. I didn't even have the vocabulary. Like, I was afraid to say the word black, right? You know, what is the right terminology to use? And I'm realizing and learning that unless I actually ask a question and, you know, can come up to Kim or anyone else on the team is like, Kim, like, what's the best way to say this? And I'm learning every day and having that comfort level, that openness on the team is so hugely like beneficial to me and I think to everyone on our team because we're just learning and things I learn. You know, someone on our team mentioned to me that hearing being described right as intimidating for a black person can be hurtful.
Yeah.
And I've never thought about it before. I've never thought that me referring to someone as them being intimidating would actually land differently, right, depending upon someone's race or someone's background.
Do you find in this current culture of us focusing on diversity and inclusion that you have more resources to ask? Like at some level, I would be question whether it's okay to ask a question of that to somebody because I don't necessarily feel like it's my job to assign a role to somebody else. Like if I came to Kim and said, well, you're a black woman, so you must know, but like that feels wrong in some way as well. Does it ever feel like you have to be like representative of everybody?
That is a thing. There's this fatigue that sort of sets in for people who carry the weight or the responsibility of educating and informing everyone. So it is true that people do need to, you know, do the work and do the research or be very thoughtful about how they approach people. On the other hand, my personal point of view, which is, you know, I mentioned just a little while ago that I sent an email out to our team. It was an email that sort of touched on that, where I said, you know, it's okay for you to come talk to me because I would rather you come have an awkward conversation with me and we solve the problem versus you just sit on it and not talk. But everyone has different capacities and different levels for conversation and openness. So I wouldn't want to tell everyone that every black woman is just like me and just as open as me. And we have to be aware that people operate, again, at different levels and different capacities.
Yeah, it's my job to educate myself, right? It's not Kim's job. And I have to do the research. I have to do the reading. There are tons of materials. We have incredible employee resource groups at Netflix that have been growing and finding their identity and identifying the impact that they want to have at Netflix. And some of our employee resource groups literally put together documents of just reading resources, right? Here are the articles. Netflix, hear the books, hear the podcasts, our own content, right, on Netflix. Like, you watch some of our documentaries and your IQ goes up, right? We also have been building our inclusion and diversity team at Netflix, which is a new function for us that we started last year in 2018. And the folks that we have on our R&D team, to me, are just thought partners.
Nellie, I know we're doing a lot on inclusion and diversity because I'm seeing it from my managers and throughout the company. We're focusing on it. But how can we improve more?
So especially, I would say, for us, our own talent acquisition team, we've been talking to our hiring managers and our business partners about diversifying their teams and helping them be inclusive leaders now for several years. And the aha I'm having as a leader right now is we in talent acquisition are not there yet ourselves. So how can we teach the business to be great at it? So my main focus for our team right now, my main focus for myself and for all the leaders that I have on the team is we've got to accelerate our progress and become the role models for the company on what it means to be inclusive leaders, inclusive colleagues, and how can we diversify our team? Like, again, we've been making progress, but we can do better progress. We need to have more diverse voices on our own team, especially in recruiting, so that when we recruit candidates, right, we know what diversity means.
Yeah. All right. Just, I got to ask, Kim, what are you watching Netflix right now?
So I most recently watched Roma, and hopefully everyone has watched it, but it was amazing. I mean, I sat on the couch and cried by myself.
That's the part, you know, I don't want to do.
Yeah, it. I mean, you may not, but it was just visually amazing. It was just a great story. I loved it. It was one of the best movies that I've seen.
Nellie?
Especially in coming from out of the holidays, I watched so much. I definitely, you know, tried to watch most of our original content. But the ones that stood out for me, my most favorite, definitely Roma. It's such a beautiful film. It's just an art piece. The other one, our German series, Perfume. Very interesting. Definitely binge watch. It's, you know, semi-based on the book. And I love our international originals.
Wonderful. All right. Thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
We Are Netflix is hosted by Lyle Troxell. He's a senior software engineer at Netflix. You can keep up with We Are Netflix on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. To learn more about careers at Netflix, go to jobs.netflix.com.